It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always with my co-host Jeff. And today we are very happy to have special guest Doug Kendrick with us, who now is a pastor, but once didn't always live the life that some would call upright and righteous. Doug, welcome to the show and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I thought that would be a good way to put it is because, you know, sometimes I feel like you get that perception in religious circles of people who do tend to think they are upright and righteous.
Oh,
and
yeah, the yeah. angels are always singing.
I don't want to say it out loud, but people like Jeff. You know what I mean? Yeah. But no, I think we all sometimes can, you know, fail to see the plank in our own eye and remember that pretty much about every story in the Bible comes from people who maybe didn't have the best experience at one time, but it's not really how you start and it's how you finish, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, God's love, his grace is just so powerful. I just feel like that man who was healed and sent by Jesus to go tell everybody in his town all that he did for him. Like, that's what I'm doing here as a pastor.
All right. So you're kind of like, hey, I've personally felt the touch of the healing experience and I can't help but share it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was raised in the church as a kid and I loved Jesus. I mean, I had a Christian family, was brought up in a Christian home, and we actually went to St. Mark's here in Findlay. The fondest of memories going to church with my grandma and grandpa, and I just remember just being so eager to learn about Jesus, to go to the youth events, and just was always asking questions. And I can even remember there was a time I made Mom very proud. She came out into the garage, and one of my neighborhood buddies, I must have been 7 or 8 years old, when my neighborhood buddy friends was over, Eric Smith was his name, and I was witnessing to him about Jesus. I was just telling him, hey, you know, Eric, if we die, we get to live forever because of Jesus. And she happened to walk out in the garage at just the right time. So that was some affirmation for her.
Oh, heck yeah. She probably thought, like, wow, I'm
it's sticking.
I'm doing the right thing. Yeah. Thank goodness. Yeah. Sometimes I want to smack this kid upside the head. But goodness, he does kind of get it.
Yeah, and as it is for a lot of us, I just hit a point where it's like, okay, I haven't seen any seas parted. I haven't seen any water turn into wine. And I just kind of felt like, you know, football was what I was supposed to live into and follow in my dad's footsteps and be a football star. You know, he was an all-state football player.
Okay.
And I was going to the same school as him, right? So there was some pressure there. I discovered my love for music in the second grade, and I wanted to be like Eddie Van Halen. He was like my hero. Like, you know, like, I know it's unusual. Right. It was unusual, but I was like an 8-year-old, 9-year-old boy sitting in my bedroom listening to cassette tapes, you know, like picking apart guitar parts. So that became like my focus and fitting in with my friends at school, which didn't always happen, but that was where my focus was. And God in my life kind of took a back seat. And then.
So you were more concerned with wanting to be a part of the popular crowd per se than maybe the path you were once set upon.
Yeah, because
I could relate 100%. Absolutely. I think actually it happens to many of us.
Yeah, you know, in the secular world, especially in the schools, it's like you know, going around talking about Jesus, you're kind of the one that's different from everybody else.
Sure.
And focused on girls and all that stuff. So then I ended up my freshman year in football, I had gone to Ohio State football camp and was playing football as a freshman, varsity, and tore my ACL the first game of the year. And that was tough, and was introduced to Percocet. And I didn't know it at the time. I was just doing what the bottle told me to, take two every 4 to 6 hours.
Well, I mean, back then, they weren't addictive, right? And they weren't going to cause all the problems.
So the story goes.
Inevitably did.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So here's a 15-year-old kid. You know, everything he's been working towards to make his family proud, to, you know, that was like my identity. That's, you know, I was one of the kids in the weight room every day. Like, this is what I do. This is what I'm known for at school is guitar and football.
So you're living the essential small town American white picket fence, two kids and a dog, a mom and a dad.
Trying to.
The version that America has painted as the American dream, right?
Yes, that's what I'm shooting for. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I never was denying Jesus, but it's just that wasn't my focus. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, very interested in being in worship. I would just wanted to be with my friends, skateboarding, playing guitar, and lifting weights. And here I tore my ACL and was on crutches for half the year. And I lost about, before I tore my ACL, my left knee, I weighed about 180 pounds, somewhere around there. If my recollection's correct, I know that I got down to about 115.
Oh my.
By the end of it.
Good grief.
Just not eating.
Just wasted away.
Yeah. And so I didn't really know what was happening, you know, psychologically with the drugs and everything. But, then I kind of became an outcast because I didn't play football. The coach kind of looked at me as like a used up, you know, used goods or damaged goods, right? Mm. I came back the next year, tweaked my knee again, was out for about 2 months, and they gave me more Percocet. And at this time, I wasn't really fitting in with the guys I played football with, and I started hanging out with guys that I skateboarded with from Findlay and who were smoking weed and doing other things. Mm-hmm. And it just kept happening, and all of a sudden, my grades started to drop. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't know, other than play guitar. I said, this is my, I'm naturally talented at this. It comes easy for me. So that became my focus, and...
So your influence shifted from spending time with people who were like-minded, had like-minded goals as you, and the sense of you guys are working out, you're exercising, you're building physical fitness.
Right.
You're probably doing pretty solid in the classroom, I'm sure, because you got to stay eligible to play sports. So, I mean, you're working on good mental fitness. You're eating probably more nutritional foods, if you're eating anything at all, when you switch the pathway you started heading.
Right.
To then... The same thing is true. You're now, but now your influences are from those who are spending their time using drugs.
Other kids that didn't know where they were going or what their purpose was in life.
So as a result, you lost yours.
Yeah. My grades started to drop. I didn't know what I wanted to do other than play guitar. Went out for wrestling. It tore my right ACL. And that's a crazy story. We were at this Camp Moran, this Russian wrestling camp, and this guy, man, he was a tough guy. I mean, it was like Rocky IV. We went to this wrestling camp together as a team. This Russian guy was teaching us how to wrestle, and we were carrying each other up these hills in the middle of winter. I mean, there was snow on the ground, carrying each other up and down these hills. You know, I'll never forget that. But
all I can hear is him, that Russian guy saying, "I must break you."
Yes, yeah.
I am the machine.
Yeah, and my wrestling coach, man, he was Russian too. He was scary too. He looked like Ivan Drago, you know? And that was a great experience for me. I started to come back to my focus being on, you know, something other than just running free and wild. You know, I started to have a focus again. And I went to the University of Michigan wrestling camp and started to improve. Then I'll never forget this. We were wrestling like exhibition matches, just practice matches, right? The camp was done. We were ready to pack up and go home. We were there for like 3 days. Coach goes to everybody, "You guys want to wrestle just one more match? Just one more?" And some guys were like, groaning, you know. Other guys were like, yeah, let's do it. And he's like, all right, we're going to wrestle one more match, then we'll get out of here. And we were having fun. And I don't really know exactly what happened, but the guy went to hip toss me, and I stuck my leg out, my right leg now, the other leg, and tore my right ACL.
So strong knees are not in your genetics.
Yeah, well, our heavyweight guy, he was one of my best friends at the time, Nick, and he said that he thought he rolled into my leg while it was stuck out.
Oh.
Yeah, so I mean, so then, you know, tried to come back out for football and tweaked my knee again, just like a little sprain where they had to go in and cut out some cartilage.
So now, during the time of before you injured your right knee this time, were you at this point in time now off of Percocets, or were you still using these?
Every one of these little, there's the reconstructive surgery on the left, then a scope where I tore some cartilage, then I tore my right ACL, and my senior year came back for football, slipped, and it was a rainy day. We were doing 7-on-7s, slipped and tweaked my knee again, had to have another surgery. Every one of those I was prescribed like as many Percocets as I wanted.
So, I mean, you were on a continuum of prescription opiates like that
all throughout high school.
So a good 4 years.
Yeah, and then, you know, you mix in the factor towards the end of high school that I'm not hanging out with everybody that I was playing football with, that wasn't focused on those things, but guys that were partying and experimenting, then they're like, hey, let's pop a couple of these. He's got a bunch of them, you know?
So you could, I mean, at this point, you could have been mixing in just a multitude of whatever was going on where you happened to be one evening.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're also now in an environment where this is socially acceptable.
Right.
And in fact, you're the cool guy because you got the stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It was like a perfect storm. So I remember that in senior year for football, I didn't know this at the time until I think just a few years ago when Dad told me this, but the doctor came in who had done all my knee surgeries and he said, I think you're done. I think we're going to tell you, you're not going to come back for football. Because normally he'd say, you can come back in a month, you know, on just a scope. They go in, cut the cartilage out. Once the swelling goes away, you're good. But he said, no, you're done. And my dad had gone and talked to him and said, you're going to tell him he's done.
Right.
And at the same time here, I'm just trying to make my parents dad, proud, yeah, right. you know?
Following his footsteps.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
you're facing this fear of disappointment.
Yes.
Going home and, Dad, I got cut. And
yeah. Mm. Yep. Yeah, the coach called and said, Doug, if you're not going to be able to play, I'm going to need you to turn in your helmet.
I said, wow. Okay. That your whole world ended.
Yeah, well, sort of, because if it wasn't for guitar, I mean, I've been playing since I was 10 years old. Actually, my senior year, I did Trek a Digital Academy. I didn't even go after I got hurt. I just stayed home with my girlfriend and did school online. I didn't even want to go face the music, you know.
Right.
Started partying, and then I had a bad experience where I thought I was going to die one night, and I prayed to Jesus for the first time in years. And from that point forward, he sobered me up for a while, and I started a band, a heavy metal band, and we ended up touring the country and got a following around here. Now, it was really, really heavy metal. That's what the guys I was... Heavier than that. Mm. That's what the guys that I hung out with, that's just what they were into.
Now, is this like a... When you say heavy metal, is it like a Christian rock heavy metal, or is it just heavy metal?
No.
We were, that deep voice.
Yeah, we were not singing for the glory of God, I can tell you that. Yes. Okay. Yep. And really, looking back at it, it's like, man, there is something special about having that interaction with the crowd and you creating a piece of art.
Absolutely.
And then them recognizing it and interacting with it. But at the same time, it's like you feel like it feels empty. Like once you look back at that, after you start walking with the Lord, it looks empty because you're doing it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And who are you at the end of the day, right?
Well, and then you know ultimately, like being on the stage, leading the entertainment, that you probably start to think to yourself, like, man, where was I leading all those
people? Yeah. So I had a kid outside of wedlock when I was 19, tried to ask his mom to marry me, was denied. That relationship fell apart. So here I am in a band, a dad at a young age. Then I met my daughter's mom and... my daughter was born, and then 2 weeks before our wedding, she left me. Mm. Mm. So here, only thing I did during the music days was maybe have a drink or two, and because I had a bad experience when I was like 18, it scared me.
So this whole time you're on the road, you're genuinely, like, you're sober.
I'm just so focused on the music.
Sure, like, you're good because you're like, man, I'm really getting some ground with this. We're touring the country.
Yeah.
I'm making a living playing music.
Well, it was tiring because I was managing the band, writing most of the music, doing all that stuff.
You're the responsible one.
Yeah, and eventually
I quit. Ultimately, you were the band with a supporting cast of musicians to play the instruments.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't want to say that and disrespect anybody because we had some amazing musicians in that band.
But were you the glue in regards to organizing things?
I think so.
Yeah.
There were a lot of lineup
changes.
Who
set up gigs and stuff and all that? Who was taking... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I did. But... I ended up just getting tired of it and quit. I said, yeah, this is just a lot of work. And there was a lot of drama, you know, being in a band. It's like almost kind of like being married. Mm-hmm. Some interesting experiences. I got to, you know, I look back at it still fondly a little bit in the fact that I got to take a shot at following my dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
You know?
Got a little taste of, hey, this is kind of what this is like. What do you think of it?
Honestly, now that I've been walking with the Lord, and I'll say this in some of the sermons and stuff at church, you know, is that it's still one of those push-pull things that I have in my life where it's like it's a sacrifice I've made to follow Jesus, where it's like I have this talent and I just kind of put that dream aside to follow Jesus because I know that I've only got so much time here to serve him, you know, and I have all of eternity to maybe play music in heaven. So
we live in a culture that says use it or lose it. And so there's this worldly wisdom that perpetuates this belief that just because you can, you should in regards to a gift. And I'll give a simple illustration. There were a few guys who were really good fishermen who left their nets to follow Jesus, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So. That's great. Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So,
you're at this time, what, 20, 21 years old?
I was in the band. I think we started actually playing out at bars and stuff when I was 18 or 19 years old.
Okay.
And left that band when I was probably 21, started another band for a couple years, and then that fell apart. So I'm 23, 24.
Okay.
I'm going off recollection. Don't mark my words on that one. I'm going off recollection, somewhere in there. And at that time, I was working 7 days a week at Santa America here in Findlay at a factory, coming home, you know, going straight to bed, waking up, taking care of my daughter, my baby daughter, my baby girl, you know, while mom's at work, taking her to the babysitter, going to work for an 8-hour shift, coming home, going to sleep.
So you guys are never really actually seeing each other.
No, but, and so we grew apart, and she ended up leaving me 2 weeks before the wedding, and that broke my heart again. I mean, I just fell apart, and it's really strange because when I was at what I thought was rock bottom, it gets worse.
I actually just was going to ask you if this was your rock bottom.
Nope, I thought it was at the time.
Okay.
I was just in grieving, you know.
A new kind of low was coming.
If you would have asked me then, I would have said yes.
So this was the rock bottom at the time.
Yeah, okay. And my next door neighbor started coming over like every other day asking me if I wanted Vicodin and stuff like that. The same things that I was introduced to.
So this was like the devil just took your knees out again and then came and knocked on your door and was like, hey, dude, you want these old substances you used to be friends with?
Yeah, and I did okay for a while. I resisted for a while, but again, I wasn't walking closely with the Lord. I wasn't leaning on him for his strength. And, you know, that's how I fell back into addiction. And then I had friends that moved in with me when she moved out, or people that I was around that were offering me the same things that I was introduced to all those years ago, to give them rides across town or just to hang out, you know. And I slipped into addiction, which was, that was my rock bottom.
Did you realize you were in trouble?
Well,
oh, I don't want to stop it here, but we need to. Listen, we've all got a story to tell, and I don't know that I've met a person more willing to tell the gory details of the mistakes they've made so they can give the glory to God. Listen, I know the story. I've heard the story a couple times now. And every time I marvel at the grace and mercy of our God. And I would encourage you to tune in next week and to find out how this amazing story ends. A story of not just recovery, but of redemption.
As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here, and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. Peace, love, and God bless. Remember, the eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.